Hey, you're awakening. You're wonderful. Thanks for coming. Thanks for joining us for Stay Free on Russell Brand. You might be watching this on Twitter.
Ooh, dear. Twitter. Careful.
Did you get verified? You might be watching this on YouTube. Do the WHO know you're there? Does your mum know you're out this late? Or you might already be watching us on Rumble, the home of free speech, where no matter what they tell you, this is a place where people can come together in peace to share opinions that potentially might damage the onward march of an authoritarian movement that seeks to dominate the globe and prevent you from communicating freely. We're going to be having a look at the departure of Tucker Carlson from Fox and why the Pentagon are so delighted. Sometimes I think this about radical liberals and whose views I respect and in so many cases absolutely align with. Why are they happy to be on the same side of the Department of Defense and the Pentagon on any sort of issue at all? Like when you imagine Woodstock, the late 60s, the civil rights movement, the great hot stirrings of the summer of 68, a countercultural movement, the women's movement, all these powerful voices. They weren't in alliance with big businesses and with the state, they were anti-establishment. It's so extraordinary to me how things have changed. We're going to be talking to Max Blumenthal from The Grey Zone a little bit later. We will not be able to have this conversation on YouTube. I think it would be dangerous, even on Elon Musk's Twitter, even within his great citadel of free speech. Would you be able to openly talk about 9/11 and the CIA? There's a link in the description. Click over to Rumble. We're going to be talking to Max Blumenthal, a fine journalist, founder of The Grey Zone, about recent revelations I can't go into here. If they're true, it's another one of those things where the conspiracy theorists had a point. And how many of those have you seen lately? But before we get into that potentially contentious story, sacré bleu! France is... What's French for fire? Do you know any French?
Not a thing, no.
You're supposed to know stuff like that. I look at you and I think you would at least know a bit of French because you can play a certain instrument that has French in it.
Yep.
Why can't you speak even a word of French? Not even... Call yourself an on-screen assistant? Is that what your credit is now?
I don't know what it is now.
Let's have a look at what's going on. Let's have a look at what's going on in France. It looks actually like riots because people have been lied to. Let's have a look.
Tonight, tensions boiling over in France. Hundreds of thousands taking to the streets across the country.
That French copper. Yeah. Go back a bit and have a look again. That French copper booted that bin himself. That! You're meant to be... There's no need for that. You're in the police force. A lot of people are posting words for fire in France. A lot of people say it's fuego. That's Spanish. That's Spanish. Join us on Locals. Press that red button. Become a part of our Locals community. They're so friendly in there. They talk about anything. Spirituality, mental health, conspiracy theories. You know the sort of things people talk about. It's lovely in there. They're all kind to each other. Hello, Stone Owen. Hello, Meady. Hello, all of you. You can join the Locals community. You get a weekly guided meditation. You get to learn more about the community. But now, for a French copper kicking a trash can, let's see him.
The streets across the country, protesting against President Emmanuel Macron's move to raise the retirement age by 2 years to 64.
There you go. Ongoing riots and discontent in France because the people there have seen that democracy isn't working. They were rioting outside the offices of BlackRock, weren't they, Gareth? Because they know that this is about centralized finance usurping the process of democracy. And I'm always struck by this, that we are one planet in limitless, potentially infinite space. And on the same little planet with essentially the same kind of interest. And I'm, by the way, not suggesting that there should be centralized power, far from it, decentralized power at every opportunity. But on the same planet, there's those riots and there's the Met Gala, which I don't know if you know this. It's sort of like people dress up in outrageous outfits. Have a look at this footage from the Met Gala the other day. People are dressing up as mouses, as cats. Look at this. I think this is the lad at a Dallas Buyers Club. Yep. He got himself all nice and thin. He's actually tried to start a cult,
Jared Leto, isn't it?
Yeah, he played a thin... No, it's Matthew McConaughey.
He's the one that got
He's been on our podcast before. I like Matthew McConaughey. He's a good actor.
No, he's great.
He is good, isn't he?
He's not who's inside this cat, just
It's
to
the
be
other
clear.
Lad.
Yeah.
It's the other lad at a Dallas Buyers Club.
That's it.
He's gone. He's dressed up as a giant mouse. Look, was
no,
he?
No, it's a cat.
That's all right. Right, this just in: Matthew McConaughey's dressed as a mouse. That's no less stupid than what's happening. Jared Leto out of Dallas Buyers Club,
yep.
Joker. He's dressed up as a cat. Why? Why is that happening? Like, just in your mind, hold the image of that French copper kicking a bin because French democracy has been usurped after all those revolutions and guillotinings they've done. Look at the Met Ball. It's meant to. Have a look at this whole story. It's crazy.
At fashion's biggest night, the cat is out of the bag.
Mr. Leto!
This year's theme, an homage to the late Karl Lagerfeld, known for his signature black and white designs.
How, like they went signature and they showed Karl Lagerfeld doing a signature, then they went black and white designs and they showed a black and white picture of him. Like, not every word needs to be illustrated with an image. It's too much, isn't it? It's too overwhelming.
They were catatonic about...
What? Like a tonic, a cat. It's too much. Like, this is an homage to Karl Lagerfeld at the Met Ball. These things I remember, because remember when I used to be famous?
Oh, yeah.
Don't say it like that.
No, I remember it. I was there for a lot of it.
I was being famous.
Yeah.
And like things like that Met Ball would happen. And I've never been to that.
Oh, you didn't go to the Met Ball.
But when I was married to KP, Katy Perry, I remember she went to that. And I was like, oh, do you have to go to that thing? But she wanted to.
Well,
and that's her right as a free individual, of course. And she did go. And like, they all, like everyone goes there. They all dressed up like that. It's like, it's mental, isn't it?
Yeah. What was your reason for like staying home? Just you fancied a night in or something?
I don't feel like things like that, mate.
Right.
I don't feel like things like that. It makes me nervous.
Did you maybe like, you bought a curry or something? You're like, we'll have a night in. Don't go off to the Met. We'll have a nice night in.
I'll have been doing something. So I'm not trying to say, oh, look at me, aren't I normal? Because I'm strange in so many ways. But like, when it comes to that, I don't like it.
I think you are pretty normal. I'll be honest.
Am I?
A night in with you is about as far away from that
I'd
as possible.
I'd rather watch football. Yeah. Have sanctuary.
Little curry. Got your trays.
Got my tray on my lap, like when we watch Man City, Arsenal.
Yeah,
mate, if you want, you put a cushion. I'll be honest with you. Yeah. My tray's already got a cushion built into the tray.
Get an extra cushion, put it on. That's a little
tray.
Tip from me.
So they can have that for free. Like, I know, because you can't. That's the thing with doing this job all day long. NATO is corrupt. This war, we're being lied about. You can't trust the pharmaceutical industry. We're being censored and surveilled. But when you're going home, you're just like a normal person. Right, kids? And they don't talk to you. What did you do at school? Tell us something. Tell us something that you did at school.
The Met Gala?
I'm just back from the Met Gala. Dallas Buyers Club was dressed as a giant cat. Like, what? What's going on? Meanwhile, France is melting down. It's too confusing. Look at this. Like, they've taken some pharaoh out of his sarcophagus and like given him his voice. I've given him his voice back. It's really, really funny. Because what? I'm confused by it. I'm confused by it as a concept, and it's certainly very confusing as a noise. And look at all of the like the pageantry that went on then. We're talking about the royal wedding, not royal wedding, coronation later this week, and the amount of pageantry that went on, and it's that goes on now. Ridiculous pageantry. Well, in those days, they would bury a pharaoh with their servants. They'd bury him with all sorts of artifacts and art and all that kind of stuff. Well, now they've like gone in there, dug him up. Like, it seems like oddly disreveled. What do you reckon his voice was like, though? Let's get Danny's voice box and give him a new voice. Look at this bizarre piece of news.
Scientists were able to mimic Nessie Amun's voice by recreating his mouth and vocal cords with a 3D printer. It allowed them to produce a single sound.
Why? Let me rest. I didn't even like seeing these little tootsies down that hole, like these little bare feet all like sort of all twizzled up by time. Like, leave him down there, in there, isn't it? Don't you? Should you?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Oh! That's the sound you could make at all culture. There's a copper kicking a bin in France. Oh!
I mean, what great revelation are they taking from this? I don't understand. Did they not think that someone back then could have made that noise?
It seems that this pharaoh, at least, was unhappy about being dug out of his tomb and made to speak thousands of years later. It's that we are being sort of reduced to idiocy through the meter of our culture. It's like dumbing down. That's what dumbing down feels like. Here's someone dressed as a cat. Here's a copper kicking a bin. Here's a meanwhile, bank are collapsing, wars are going on, agitating China, encircling them with military bases. this experiment's not working properly. This is time for a radical reevaluation. Let us know. I mean, we're thinking about starting new communities. I believe Jared Leto tried a community, didn't he?
Wow.
But I don't know what we're
on. Look at him now.
Ah! this is one of our... if ever you want to know where technology could potentially take you, this is an experiment to recreate a voice box that we've shown you before, but we'll show you again because it's not disgusting, but it looks disgusting and it sounds weird. Merry Christmas. What's that achieving? Yeah, it is disturbing.
It looks a bit like, with that mic in front of his mouth, he's like he's at the Met Gala and someone's gone, "What are you wearing today?" And he's just...
Will you be appearing as the Joker again? Where did you get those pearls? And did it take a long time to get those out of the bottom of the sea and then polish them and then turn them into a dress? Can we have 4 more years of Joe Biden? Can we have a press dinner where nobody mentions when celebrating journalism that Julian Assange is in prison without trial in the United Kingdom awaiting extradition? Because of the Espionage Act, because he revealed information that's definitely sensitive, but also, I would say, relevant to the American taxpayers who are paying for these wars. Remember, you are paying $1,000 every single year to the military-industrial complex. We're going to be bringing you a report about that later.
See what
this
you did
week.
There. You kind of turned that into a kind of drone, I would suggest.
To satire, girl.
Yes, yes. Very good. Very good.
Oh, yeah, I can use my noise. Someone's pointed out that I've got this noise and I can use it whenever I want. should we leave? Listen, guys, I think we're going to leave. If you're watching us on YouTube or Elon Musk's Citadel of Free Speech, that is Twitter, we're going to leave you now because we're going to speak to Max Blumenthal, who's a fantastic journalist, absolutely fantastic. He founded Grey Zone. He founded it. And then he bloody well edits it.
Wow.
Look what I found. Founded. Didn't found it, like find it. He founded it. Like, ooh, it's foundation. Then he edits it.
Right.
Nice, isn't it? For yeah. Bloom. That's
what have you ever thought you might start editing this?
No, mate. I find it too hard. we're going to be talking to him. We're off YouTube already. We're going to talk to him about... I think people got the idea that it was going to be about 9/11, saying that the CIA, the two of the 9/11 hijackers... were CIA operatives.
Recruits, yeah.
Recruits. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that 9/11 was a CIA scam, but, put together, look at the various things you've seen, whether it's that Loose Change documentary that used to be on YouTube, don't know if it still is. Tell us, guys, is it still on YouTube? Can you find it now? Tell us in the chat. Or if you're like a Michael Moore type person, remember Fahrenheit 9/11 when he was saying all the Saudi royals were getting flown out of there and the Bushes and the Saudi royal family?
Yep.
You know, it used to be that you could get radical stuff from the left, and that's one of the reasons I like Max Blumenthal. I don't think he's a right-wing fascist, and I don't think he's an anti-Semite, because I feel like Blumenthal might be a Jewish name I've not asked before. All right, Max, are you a right-wing fascist anti-Semite? Let's get that out from the top.
Well, I've been called a self-hating Jew.
That's how they do it.
And, I always wondered why the self-loving Jews who call me a self-hater hate so many people from, Palestinians, Muslims. It's always a question I've had. And why they seem to favor sending U.S. taxpayer dollars to neo-Nazis in Ukraine if they care so much about our history. But, it really depends on who you ask. What label you want to apply to me?
It's harder to get to anti-Semitism accusations for someone who is themselves Jewish, I would have thought, than people that are explicitly neo-Nazis, do the actual salute and everything, are down with a swastika. Like, that for me seems like a more legit charge of anti-Semitism. I mean, I think we can conclusively say that the Nazis were anti-Semites. Mate, can we ask you a little bit about the CIA infiltration of the 9/11 hijackers and how this is distinct from the kind of conspiracy theories that have circled around that event for the last 20 years or however long it is since it happened?
Yeah, we can definitely talk about that. This was related to a report we ran. Another masterpiece by Kit Clarenberg, who you've had on, and I've written about this case in my book, The Management of Savagery, which came out in 2019. When I wrote that book, which is about the history of the U.S. and its allies using jihadists as proxies, as assets to undermine their geopolitical foes, from the Soviet Union to Syria. We didn't know as much as we know now. There had been an investigation called Operation Encore that the FBI, that involved the FBI agents who had been attempting to prevent or the 9/11 attacks, or were at least investigating Al-Qaeda. And that investigation ended in 2016. The results were completely redacted. And so it took until 2021 for a 21-page filing by a guy named Don Canestraro, who is the lead investigator for the Office of Military Commissions, which was overseeing the cases of 9/11 defendants, for us to really learn what had always been suspected, and which I got at in my book. I said I suspected that two of the hijackers on American Airlines Flight 77, which crashed into the Pentagon, had been recruited by the CIA and by a very secretive, and I would say corrupt, unit within the CIA that had been charged since 1996 with taking on Osama bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda network. It's called Alex Station. And, you know, this is widely suspected that they had been possibly recruited by the CIA. And it was confirmed by FBI agents interviewed by Don Canestraro in this bombshell filing, which was, and of course, it was completely buried, just like a few blogs had picked it up. And so Kit went ahead and put all of the details together for us, going back through Operation Encore and, you know, taking us to the beginning of the cover up of the 9/11 plot, the cover up by the CIA.
That's not the same, of course, as saying that 9/11 was an inside job, and it certainly doesn't verify some of the ideas that have circulated, although, of course, it's not the only inconsistency or troubling piece of reporting that's taken place around that event. And of course, it's well established that the CIA, as you said, participated in the establishment of Al-Qaeda, funded Al-Qaeda. So it's not implausible that there were recruits from Al-Qaeda operating in with the US. It's kind of likely. Does that open the door, though, to conjecture around the events of 9/11 more broadly? And sometimes, like, you know, forgive me if this is like a kind of question an idiot would ask, it possibly is derived from the fact that to some degree I am one. Isn't it like true that like Building 7, that there was a building in New York that kind of went down and then it just sort of stopped talking about it? My memories are hazy of that event, and I like, you know, like, and it's difficult to deliberately and responsibly put together narrative points that are proven.
Building 7's weird. I mean, I'm a 9/11 conservative. I get a lot of heat from people who think it was an inside job, but Building 7's just weird. I mean, I remember on the day of 9/11, just hearing that Building 7 had gone down because of the impact to the other buildings, and it just sounded weird to me. The footage looks unusual. But I prefer to stick to the facts that I really know the most about, and this case is something that, you know, I've followed for years. The case of Khaled al-Midhar and Nawaf al-Hazmi, who are the two kind of muscle hijackers, supposed muscle hijackers on American Flight 77. And it's very clear they were recruited by the CIA. So within the, you know, the theories, or those who hold theories around 9/11, there's kind of three schools of thought. Did the CIA do this because they simply wanted to infiltrate Al-Qaeda and gain sources? And they protected these sources from the FBI. If the FBI had been alerted about the presence, and I'll tell you the whole story of al-Hazmi and al-Midhar in a second, but if they had not protected these sources from the FBI, the 9/11 plot would have been easily broken up. So was it just because they wanted to gain access to Al-Qaeda, or did they allow the 9/11 attacks to happen in order to produce what Paul Wolfowitz called in the weeks before 9/11, the catastrophic and catalyzing event that would allow the US to wage a massive military intervention in the Middle East and carry out its and Israel's goals? And then there's the third school of thought, which is that the US government or US intelligence was directly involved in the plotting of the attack in order to carry out those geopolitical and imperial objectives. And in the first camp, as I said, I'm a 9/11 conservative, but these new revelations raise a lot of questions about motives.
I think it's generally, obviously, sensible to remain conservative, particularly when dealing with such sensitive matters. And even on our channel, where we fuse entertainment and conjecture, we are careful to ensure that we only use reliable information that's already been published frequently from Grey Zone, as a matter of fact. But if you apply this conservatism in this instance, where does it take you to even have the information that the CIA had operatives that were on Flight 77? I know you named them. So what? Like, it could have been prevented, I suppose. Is that what you're saying?
It could have been prevented, and Al-Qaeda could have never been created. I mean, we can go back to 1979, but in this case, you have, it's pretty fair to say, at least one component of the Day of Planes operation that had been planned for years and years and years to strike strategic targets inside the United States. One component was a Saudi CIA intelligence operation gone awry. So you have Khaled al-Mihdhar and Nawaf al-Hazmi, two Saudi citizens, radical Al-Qaeda ideologues who appear at a 1999 meeting in Malaysia. January 5th meeting in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, with some of the top lieutenants of Al-Qaeda, including a figure who is involved in the bombing of the USS Cole just about a few months earlier. And here you have CIA operatives videotaping the meeting. Apparently, they got no audio. They then broke into Khaled al-Mihdhar's hotel room when he was transiting through Dubai after the meeting, took a picture of his passport, and found that he had a multi-entry visa to the U.S. Okay, so you have an Al-Qaeda, hardcore Al-Qaeda operative with a multi-entry visa to the U.S. And not only that, he and his buddy, al-Hazmi, were able to, from there, get on a flight to Los Angeles International Airport, walk off the flight with no interrogation or questioning, and then be picked up at the airport by someone named Omar al-Bayoumi, who is another Saudi citizen operating undercover as an employee of the Saudi aviation ministry or aviation, as an aviation employee. So he could, I guess, get access to the airport. He then takes them to rent an apartment, gives them $1,500 a month for that apartment. These are two guys who speak not a word of English. They're picked up, according to their neighbors, in black limos every night and are meeting with strange men. They're going to flight lessons. And it later turns out that they were actually living in that apartment with an FBI informant. Bayoumi, of course, turns out to be a Saudi intelligence officer who is managing these two figures. And the FBI never learns that these two figures were in the country after attending the super summit of Al-Qaeda on their way to carry out an attack that George W. Bush was warned about in Crawford, Texas, a month before it took place in a presidential daily briefing. Bin Laden determined to strike inside the U.S. This was at a time when the system was blinking red, according to former U.S. intelligence officials. And what happened was, the director of Alex Station, this corrupt and highly secretive CIA unit, which was charged with recruiting Al-Qaeda officials or recruiting Al-Qaeda assets, Richard Blee, refused to tell the FBI's unit in charge of investigating Al-Qaeda that al-Hazmi and al-Mihdhar were even inside the United States. There are so many more acts of cover-up that took place to prevent the FBI from learning about them as this plot progressed. They weren't even told that they were on the flight manifest of American Airlines Flight 77 until days after the attack. The FBI wasn't even told that they had been at a meeting in Malaysia with a planner, a known planner of the attack on the USS Cole. So the CIA covered this up all the way to 9/11, and it's the same CIA that is responsible in so many ways for fueling the rise of Al-Qaeda and keeping it alive to the present day.
And in fact, yes, you're quite right that you can sort of chart the history of the CIA to the founding of the Mujahideen, and also you can say that there are still people in power, as you obviously just did, that are participating presumably in comparable programs even now. And I guess that's when we talk about the deep state, we're talking about inaccessible institutions and bodies that are powerful, that are able to act without mandate in ways that seem to be at odds with the interests of the American population and perhaps the world at large, and the way that the kind of global narrative is managed and enacted right up to present day conflicts and potential forthcoming conflicts involves these agencies. So sometimes even when you're approaching it conservatively in the manner that you understandably are, when it's such a potentially incendiary story, it's still difficult not to feel that the system of government and deep government in particular is concerning. Mate, do you suppose that when we talk about a story like the Nord Stream pipeline, which is sort of increasingly appears to have been an operation conducted by the forces of this nature, do you imagine that with the burgeoning conflict between the United States and China, Taiwan could be subject to a kind of a Nord Stream like event within their semiconductor industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's not just idle talk. Give me 2 seconds and I'll pull up the name of the former U.S. general who's actually proposed a U.S. attack on Taiwan's semiconductor industry to prevent it from falling. This is a former national security advisor.
While you're looking for that data,
I have it right in front of me. It's Robert O'Brien, and he was a major figure in the Trump administration's kitchen cabinet of national security advisors. And he has called for the U.S. to bomb Taiwan's semiconductor industry, which would be actually a much more serious attack on the global economy than Nord Stream. I mean, Taiwan produces the majority of semiconductors through its TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. It would mean just basically a collapse of the global economy in order to prevent the factory and the technology from falling into Chinese hands. And this is not just Robert O'Brien calling for this. We have other U.S. think tanks that have, the Center for other U.S. think tanks. Sorry, the U.S. Army War College actually made a similar suggestion. So this is not necessarily a call for a false flag attack to trigger a war, but it shows that the U.S. would willingly devastate Taiwan and Taiwan's economy to prevent this critical asset from falling into Chinese hands. And it really highlights how the U.S. sees its supposed allies, who are really just proxies, and that includes Ukraine. The U.S. is willing to see Ukraine's economy destroyed and its best men killed to extend a war against Russia, thrown into a slaughterhouse in order to bleed Russia.
We should pull up that clip of the mainstream media where that current sitting US politicians said, like where they were asked them on the mainstream, is this the semiconductors? That's like the resource wars of the 90s, isn't it? Where you sort of we have to have control of these semiconductors. And then he just plainly said on the TV, yeah, we can't lose control of them. And then he went like 10 seconds later, but actually, this is a war about democracy and freedom. Just sort of said it. Democracy and freedom is what keeps us motivated. I'm glad you kept talking a moment ago, because I was, to fill time, going to ask you a question that Firegirl 2020 was asking in the chat. Did you enjoy the Met Gala? Did you ask Max if he watched the Met Ball? I was like, this. I feel that Max may not know that there was a Met Gala that took place.
I've been taking a break and I'm in Mexico right now, so I missed out on all that nihilistic dystopian hijinks, but
they were dressed up as cats and stuff. Yeah, it was pretty good. Have you got that clip anywhere? Has anyone got that out the back, or is it to Michael McCall? If you can find that Michael McCall, was he on ABC?
So should have put that.
Yeah, see if you can find that. So, Nice one, Phil. Do you think that the fact that there are semiconductor factories in Taiwan is a not insignificant consideration with this amidst this growing hostility?
Is that a question for me?
Max, like, do you think that's a significant component? If there were no semiconductor factories in Taiwan, would this all be going down now?
Well, it is a major component, but it doesn't also explain U.S. aggression vis-a-vis Philippines toward China. I mean, this is about surrounding and encircling China, creating kind of a pressure cooker effect on China's leadership, and forcing China to spend more and more money on its military and less on its social programs, and, you know, driving this program Xi Jinping has of building a middle class and redeveloping the country. It is also about competing with China, but I assume by now the U.S. would be eager to move those semiconductor plants to a place they would consider safer, because as Thomas Friedman wrote, Taiwan is to be the U.S. porcupine against China. Taiwan is like, if you consider the concept of Israel as explained by former Secretary of State Alexander Haig, where Israel is an unsinkable aircraft carrier. It's a colonial implant in the middle of the Middle East that's a Spartan state, armed to the teeth with the most advanced weaponry, and the U.S. is going to use it to attack any country that takes an independent or adversarial position. And that's why Israel has invaded Lebanon, attacked Hezbollah, why it's constantly bombing Syria these days, and it says it's attacking Iranian targets. It just attacked deep in Syria and Homs. So that's also the role of Ukraine against Russia, a country that's controlled from the outside by the U.S. to antagonize Russia, to keep it in a constant state of war, to keep its leadership paranoid. And then Taiwan plays that role with China. And to a certain extent, South Korea, Japan, and Philippines are intended to play the same role, which is why, by the way, the U.S. is so hostile to a peace arrangement between North and South Korea.
With so many unpalatable truths so palpably and demonstrably factual, it's clear that you require powerful machinery to prevent people assessing reality in those blunt terms. You need ongoing deep state operations. You need a compliant media. You don't need people inquiring about the true nature of geopolitics and the kind of corporate and military relationships and the kind of colonial and resource necessities that underwrite much of the action that we're describing. And with the ability for this kind of counter-narrative to be expressed, like either on Grey Zone or reported on our channel, you need censorship and surveillance. No wonder Julian Assange is in prison. No wonder Edward Snowden's in Russia. What do you think when you see something like that White House correspondence dinner, like this sort of congratulatory circle jerk, where it's apparently the consensus between the media and the state is sort of reiterated and the framing for what's possible to discuss is reasserted?
Yeah, I mean, what you see with the White House press correspondence dinner is the most hated group in America, hated more than even Congress, and justifiably so. The regular American people hate the media because they know they're being lied to. And the media is there, the elite Beltway media, giving itself awards for publishing fake stories. Going back to the Steele dossier on Russiagate, they were celebrating themselves for publishing fake stories because the means justify the ends. And then the means was humiliating and destroying Donald Trump. In this case, it's about celebrating and circling the wagons around Joe Biden, a doddering figure who, I mean, he put on a pretty good performance there, but someone who is simply a representative of the establishment and the kind of subculture that exists inside the Beltway that the rest of Americans are hostile to for justifiable reasons. And this is the same press that's trying to lie us into a war with China over Taiwan that's continuing to push this endless proxy war with Ukraine. That's basically a cheerleader for that war. And that was the main vessel for duping the public into supporting war with Iraq. And what they're going to do if there is conflict with China is sell the war the same way they did with Iran. It's a war for freedom. and they'll cover up any false flag or any incident that drives us into that war. And you know who knows better than the press is actually the rank and file of the U.S. military. They do not want to go to war with China because tens of thousands of enlisted soldiers will die in the name of U.S. empire and the so-called great power competition. That's not just according to me. That's according to the Center for Strategic and International Studies, which is a neoconservative oriented, very anti-China think tank in Washington, which ran 24 war games pitting the U.S. military against China following a hypothetical Chinese invasion of Taiwan in 2026. And they found that the U.S. lost dozens of ships, hundreds of aircraft, and tens of thousands of service members. And Taiwan's economy was devastated, which means you can assume there will be hundreds of thousands of dead Taiwanese people, maybe millions, maybe a nuclear exchange, maybe nuclear weapons reach China and Guam, maybe they reach California. Hawaii has already run emergency operations where they were told that missiles were incoming. It was a lie, but the citizens there were terrorized into believing it in order to test the response systems. So whatever you think about China, I know there are many people watching this who don't like China's system because they saw what it did in response to COVID. This is about human life being devastated. And if that war ever takes place, it will produce an existential crisis inside the U.S. that will destroy whatever's left of the veneer of democracy. And the press, those people cheering Biden like sycophantic, loyal stenographers for the empire, they will be responsible and they will be least likely to die because they'll be furthest away from the fight.
We'll look at the mainstream media now discussing the burgeoning conflict and look at the transition between truth and propaganda that takes place even within the clip. This is Michael McCall. I can't remember if it's CNN or ABC, one of them. Have a look.
Make the basic case for why Americans not only should care about what happens in Taiwan, but should be willing to spill American blood and treasure to defend Taiwan.
Nobody wants that. I think the deterrence is key here. We travel to Japan, South Korea. We are in Guam. We are meeting with our allies, our partners here, if you will. They don't have a NATO in the Pacific, but they do have partners. We want to make sure that they are ready and supportive of the United States and Taiwan. The case for Taiwan, that's a very good question. About 50% of international trade goes through the international straits. But I think more importantly, Chuck, is that the TSMC manufactures 90% of the advanced global supply of advanced semiconductor chips. If China invades and either owns or breaks this, we're in a world of hurt.
There you go. All right, Max. Hey, thanks very much for joining us for that. We really appreciate your time. And is that what room are you in there? Is that your house? And why is there such a big dream catcher there?
I don't have any dream catchers in my house. That would be cultural appropriation. I'm somewhere in an undisclosed location at an Airbnb in Mexico. So
really, for the best that you don't disclose it, some of the ideas you come out with, conservative on the subject of 9/11 or otherwise. Thanks, Max. It's great to speak to you and great to learn from you. You can get more from Max by going to thegrayzone.com. You can read his book, The Management of Savagery, and just follow Max. Love and adore Max. Cheers, Max. Lovely speaking to you, mate. That was fantastic. Okay, so listen, right? We're going to, in a minute, we're talking to Barry Weiss, one of the Twitter file journalists. She's brilliant. We spoke to her before.
On Locals.
Yeah. So if you're a member of Locals, right? So you're watching this on Rumble now. Join Locals. You can, oh dear, that's rude. You can join this rude conversation. And also you can watch us live chat to Barry Weiss. We always do stuff like when Jordan Peterson came on, we chatted to him live on there. When Eckhart Tolle came on, chatted to him live on there. When Vandana Shiva came on, chatted to her live on there. Now Barry Weiss came on and chatted to her live on there. So join Locals, right? Click over there. And I think you've got to press that red button. Also, there's like weekly podcasts where I do guided meditations. They're really good. And you'll learn more about the stuff we do. Look at my dog. Isn't he lovely? He's a lovely lad, isn't he? Isn't he a good boy? Isn't he a good boy? Frenchie Buff's new to Locals. She's just saying she or he or him or her or they. I don't care. And they're getting right in there with a balls chat.
Right.
Balls chat. Nice. But
regular item, maybe?
Regular item.
in future.
Do you like them?
Right.
Like, I mean, if you can make King Charles's head out of chocolate and medals out of bounty bars and stuff, and that is something that's happened, and we'll be talking about that later in the week, then why can't people just chat about nutbags?
No, they can.
They can, can't they? Mm. Join us at Community Festival as well between the 14th and 17th of July. And tomorrow on our show, Stay Free, we've got Daniel Chandler, who's my mate, who's talking about the philosophy and politics of John Rawls. He's talking about equality, stuff like that. It's going to be a fantastic conversation. He's my friend, so I know it'll be brilliant. And we'll talk about... I'm going to sneeze. See that sneeze technique?
Mm.
That's my technique.
Really good.
My technique, that's the one I use, but now we're off, so come tomorrow to see us chatting to Daniel Chandler about his book Free and Equal, What Would a Fair Society Look Like. See and if you're on Locals, you can stay with us and see us chat to Barry Weiss, and I'm going to be watching. My personality will change. I have respect for Barry because she's a brilliant journalist, so I'm not going to be here feeding dog treats to a German shepherd and chatting to you lot about airy nutbags.
Good.
That's not the way to win a culture war. That's not the way to get people to come together against establishment power, to throw off the shackles of a media that wants you dumb. Okay, hey, see you tomorrow, unless you're on Locals, when I'll see you in a few seconds. Click the red button, join us there. Not for more of the same. We wouldn't dream of insulting you in such a way, but for more of a different, baby. Till then, stay free. Men switch in, switch on, switch off. Men switch in, switch on, switch off. Switch in, switch on, switch off. Men switch in, switch on, switch off.